All right, Don. So we've been sitting here trying to do impersonations of Harold Holt, but neither of us knows what he actually sounds like.
That's correct.
So before we find out for real and we actually look at a YouTube clip of him talking, let's each give it a crack.
All right.
And we'll see who was closest to the mark.
And just confirming, neither of us have heard him speak during the course of our research. We are completely going in blind.
Yeah, okay. The sentence we're going to say, we're both going to say the same sentence. Sentence is going to be...
How about hold on to your stovepipes?
That's going to sway.
That's the sentence.
That's going to sway us too much. Okay, ready?
I think we should hold on to our stovepipes.
See, I think that's too Australian. I think he's going to be a bit more British.
Okay, hit us with
I'll have a go.
Hit us with it.
Yes, I think we should hold on to our stovepipes and they will be held.
That's very good, Prince Charles. A very good Prince Charles.
It was a bit Prince Charles. Okay. Let's get let's get some audio of Harold Holt and just see what he actually sounds like.
Alrighty.
No, it brings to culmination a great deal of work earlier in the year.
Okay, so Luke absolutely nailed that. That was exact.
I'm taking that as a big win there, Don. Thank you very much.
Unbelievable. I'm actually impressed.
To be fair, any man of that generation, that would have been the exact voice that I did.
That's true. Amazing. Anyway, this episode is on Australian Prime Minister Harold Holt. Sounds boring. Look, it probably will be boring, but maybe a bit less boring than you think, but still boring. Anyway.
All right, Don, welcome back for another What's That About? Let's be very clear up front. Our listenership is falling off a cliff.
It's in free fall. It's like if you look at the market trend at the global financial crisis, when it just dropped off a cliff, we are in a global podcast crisis at the moment.
All the advice we were getting was regular episodes every week or every month. Be consistent. The second we started doing that, people have walked away in droves.
They have. They realized, actually, I don't want to listen to these guys that often.
It is generous referring to it as a cliff to begin with. It was really more of a step, and the step is now under the ground. That's where we're at.
It's a very slight decline now.
We were talking to a room of five people, and four of them have left. That's what's happened.
Well, that's okay. There's still one left. So I don't know who that person is. It's not Jeremy, that's for sure. But it's someone.
So you've just mentioned Jeremy. So for those who are getting up to speed, as part of our 100th episode extravaganza, we did a lucky dip draw, pulled the name of a listener out of a hat from those that filled out our Biggest Tolerator survey. There was a guy called Jeremy who was the winner of a What's That About mug. And he put his email in. We got in touch and he hasn't got back to us to let us know who he is and where we need to send his mug. So we're a little bit stuck.
Yeah.
And so last episode we gave him one more month to identify himself. And then tonight we were meant to redraw if he hadn't identified himself. But my computer with the names of the entrants is in the other room and I'm very lazy. I can't be bothered to go and get it and turn it on. You know, the boost up time takes ages.
Yeah, because you hang on to computers. You've still got a Pentium 486, I think, from 1992.
Still does the trick.
Yeah.
And so
it plays California games really, really well. and Minesweeper.
So, Jeremy, because of my laziness, you have one more month. And so next episode, we will redraw.
And I'll actually get the mugs made because I'm in a holding pattern. Because, out of respect for Jeremy, I think he deserves me not making the mug yet. That's my excuse.
All right, Don. So, as always, you know, what's been happening what's been happening with Don the last month?
Well, not a lot. I had to, for work, had to, like, put on a bit of a training thing. And, look, I wasn't doing the training, but I had to do a little intro. Mm. And part of the intro involved explaining, you know, the housekeeping kind of rules, where the toilets are, the emergency exits.
Yeah.
And I came up with this idea. I was like, hang on a minute. There's a joke in here somewhere. And I'm notoriously bad at knowing what's appropriate and what's not.
Where's
the line? I don't know. So I just kind of thought, right, I'm talking about emergency exits. Like emergency exits are behind us and the toilets are also just behind us as well in case you have a different kind of emergency exit. And I really came very close to saying that to a bunch of professional people there for training. I found the line. I didn't say it, but I kind of wish I did. I feel like, is it that bad? Another kind of emergency exit.
I reckon you've shown good judgment. I always imagine if someone in the feedback form was saying inappropriate that someone put an explosive diarrhea joke in a workshop of this nature.
That's hard. It could have been urine as well. It could have been. It could have been both. There could be both types. So that would be my rebuttal.
If I was participant in that workshop though, I would have been loving that joke. Anytime someone throws out a genuine joke in a workshop, I'm loving it.
I've often tried, but you know what? It never goes down well.
Can I tell you, because I did quite a bit of public speaking and presenting in my work, and I for ages would always start with a little gentle joke that would just kind of just lighten the room and, you know, you ingratiate yourself to the crowd a little bit.
Yeah.
For the last a year or two, all of my jokes have been falling flat.
Yeah.
And I'm spooked. I'm absolutely spooked. I did one the other day where I got
Good. It's good that your professional life's catching up with your personal life, because they've been falling flat for years at the dinner table.
And I looked at the crowd and I had this moment where I've gone, I'm just going to get up here and say what I need to say and get off. I'm not going to... Because that transition, when you've made a joke and it doesn't land, and then you have to transition to your prepared material, that's the longest transition in the book.
Well, it's the worst, because often there's a pause. If you're leaving even a brief pause for laughter, then that's your dangerous time right there. You need to just keep moving.
And sometimes it's not just a pause I leave. I'll like leave a pause, lean forward, smile, teeth out, eyes like waiting for the reaction, get nothing. That's even worse.
In my head, you're saying the joke, and then you're holding your hand up for a high five to say, hey, high five, huh? And then you're not getting anything. You're left hanging. Yeah. I found the line anyway, which is, that's something.
You know, very good decision.
But I still think I might, if I get to the end of my contract and I've got one more of these trainings to do, I'm going to go for it. I'm doing it.
Cannot wait. Cannot wait.
I'm an artist. Okay.
It was very similar to a joke I made when I was an MC at a wedding, and I made a joke at the beginning about, you know, ladies and gentlemen, you know, be aware that the toilets are there on the left-hand side. The wishing well is back there on the right-hand side. Please don't get the two mixed up.
And that's good.
Those jokes where you can imagine someone doing a poo in a wishing well, great joke.
Yeah, it is good. I was imagining in the bucket and then it lowers down is what I would think. But
perfect.
That is good. And did that not go down well?
Well, that's a whole other story for another day. That emceeing night was like, it was a very mixed room. A third of the room were loving it. A third of the room were tolerating it. And a third of the room were hating it. It was a long night.
But that is often the case with weddings, because there's such a broad range of people there.
Yeah.
You have to cater, your speech has to cater from kids to very cranky old people.
Yeah. In hindsight, I should have just played it a little bit straighter. I went too many jokes.
Oh, points for trying. You gotta have a crack. Yeah. Okay, what have you been up to?
Well, I had, once every 7 years this happens to me. And when it does, my goodness, it is awkward. Imagine you're on the train, or you're in the office, and you've got your work trousers on.
Sorry, you told me about this beforehand. I didn't realize you made it to the train. Okay, tell everybody what we're talking about. I thought you realized straight away. You actually started going, you're on the commute to work.
I actually had a situation where I was sitting in my office chair. This has happened multiple times, but not in recent times. Okay, this is a little bit of a historical memory, where I was sitting in my office swivel chair in a open plan office. And I feel a little bulge in the bottom near my calf in my pants. And I'm like, oh, what is that? It's like a big bulge on the side. And I reach down and I put my hand under my pants and pull out the bulge. And then I'm sitting there in the office holding a pair of underpants.
That's so bad. So you made it. You put them on. You probably had breakfast. You made, what about your day? And then you made the commute to work. And then, and then you're walking into work, saying good day to everybody. Happy we had a good weekend. And you still got a second pair of undies in the leg of your pants. That's a hell of a trip.
It is one of the most awkward moments. You're like, I must
that's
have.
Great. I thought you noticed it straight away. No. And I'm like, oh, that's still funny. That's good. Mention that.
The night before, I must have, you know, when you take your undies and your pants off at the same time and the undies get caught in the pants. The next day, yeah. I put the pants back on. It's shriveled down to the bottom of the pants all the way into work. I remember, I actually have the distinct memory of, as quick as I can, taking the undies and putting them in my backpack just to hide the evidence.
Do you think anyone saw?
I don't think so, but not, me being me, I then went and told everyone.
Yeah, that's true. That's probably true. That's good.
That's happened a couple of times, but it also happened very, it would jog my memory. It also happened to someone I know recently. The same thing happened to them. And so I'm like, it's not just me. This is a common thing.
And they got
this
to work. Happens.
Halfway to work. Absolutely outstanding. Now, we actually do have a review for the Room of the Review tonight.
Yeah, no, we got a friendly reminder from Steve Thompson on Instagram and just kind of said, guys, what gives? I submitted a review a while ago and you haven't read it. So I don't know how it slipped through the cracks, but thanks for the reminder, Steve. And let's crack into it. Should we open the door?
Yep. Let's open the door.
Yeah. All right.
Is it open?
Yeah, no, I put some WD-40 on it.
At last.
You
at
can't
last.
Hear a thing. It is lovely.
Jeez, okay. That stuff's effective.
Oh, it's so good.
Thanks, Luke and Don. Just one review this week from Steve Thompson. 5 stars. Oddly addictive. When you listen to What's That About, you feel like you're at a table with friends. They're casual and genuine, and their humour is superbly corny. They never fail to bring a smile to my face. The only downside is waiting for the next episode. Well done, Luke and Don, and their mum. Back to you in the studio.
Very lovely review from Steve there. Thank you so much, Steve.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate the review.
Just one tiny little bone to pick. Don't want to be look at gift horse in the mouth when it comes to a review. Often people sneak in a little tiny backhanded compliment into our reviews. And you know how I feel about backhanded compliments.
You're a sensitive little man. Is it? You're too sensitive. Are you referring to corny jokes?
Superbly corny, I think was the quote.
Of all the corny jokes, these are the better ones. I think, look, Steve knows that we are delivering champagne comedy every single episode. And champagne, traditionally, is from maize, which is... is it? I don't think it is at all. I'm just trying to make something happen there. Okay.
It's good though. It's good.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you, Steve. In all seriousness, thank you very much. Let's actually start the episode. Are we ready to start the episode?
I think so. Let's get on with it.
Okay. This episode is about the disappearance of Harold Holt, who was a serving Australian Prime Minister when he walked into the ocean and disappeared. Don?
Yeah, which is actually bizarre. To think about that happening in this day and age. Can you imagine? So the Prime Minister, for our American listeners, essentially the President. So this is like the President went swimming and just disappeared.
Yeah.
Which would never happen now.
This was in the era, LBJ, for our American listeners, is LBJ going for a swim in the ocean and then just never coming back out.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Which I think some people would have wanted that. But I think, was LBJ a bit on the nose?
Well, I think I don't know much about LBJ other than all the way with LBJ, which is...
That's a great line. Don't you reckon that?
Great line.
All the way. That's great.
All the way with LBJ is great. He was It was Vietnam War controversy with LBJ, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think we're.
Well, I think was LBJ the guy that took over once Kennedy was shot?
Oh, jeez, we're out of our depth again. Is that right? We're bloody out of our depth again.
Yeah, look, that's just. Most of our listeners are American who would know all these things, and they've got a couple of idiots trying to pretend they know what they're talking about.
Tell you what, though, in the Fair Dinkum department, could any of our American listeners tell us who was the Prime Minister before Harold Holt?
I reckon Steve Thompson could. Steve Thompson could do it.
What we are missing, though, Don, is let's set the scene here with a Don's definition.
Hold on to your stovepipes. It's time for Don's definition.
So Harold Edward Holt was an Australian politician and lawyer who served as the 17th Prime Minister of Australia from 1966 until his disappearance and presumed death in 1967. He held office as leader of the Liberal Party of Australia. So essentially, as Luke sort of said, he went swimming, and we'll get into it in a bit more depth about why he went swimming when it was like a massive storm or very rough.
Choppy. Choppy's the phrase.
Very choppy.
Yeah.
Oh, so much choppy.
Mate.
So much choppy.
Big chop today. Yeah.
And he just never came out again.
Incredible. Now, this is one of those things where, I don't know about you, but I always have this idea of when people refer to Harold Holt a lot in modern Australian conversation.
Like, it's fully part of our culture now.
Yeah. People talk about it all the time in many different ways with a bit of black humour. But I never actually took the time to dig into the circumstances surrounding his disappearance, including the day itself. And it's actually a lot more interesting than I thought it was going to be. This is a smoky for quite a good topic.
Well, yeah, he had a very interesting life and a very sordid life. And you don't really know about it. But in Australia, there's a famous saying. It's like if someone, just say the classic, you know, when you're young and you're going out to a nightclub and... And I was one of these people. I just got tired and just left and didn't tell anyone.
Disappeared.
That's kind of doing the Harry.
Yeah.
And yeah. Where's Luke? Oh, he did the Harry.
Did the Harry, yeah. He's done the Harold Holt. I mean, you've just disappeared out of thin air.
Yeah.
I used to love doing the Harry. I just like, I can't be bothered saying goodbye to everyone. I'm just going
to
disappear.
I often did it. Did you ever pretend to go to the toilet, but they just walk straight out the door? Like, okay, I'm just going to the toilet. Be back in a minute.
Yeah.
And the taxi's already waiting.
Yeah.
I just couldn't be bothered dealing with the goodbyes.
You're walking down the street so smug going, I'm out of here. That was like absolutely priceless. I have a mate who was such a good proponent of doing the Harry that he used to be, if he was at a house party, he used to actually scale the back fence and get out. He just jumped the back fence and get out that way just to avoid all the traditional entrances and exits. Very good.
That is extreme. That is extreme. Because you do know, even when you're at a party, even like at our age, it's a bit of an ordeal. You got to say goodbye and have a chat.
Effortful.
A quick chat about when you're going to catch up next. And it's still an ordeal. I'm going to bring it back. I'm going to climb out the bathroom window next time I'm at a party. I'm just out of here. I'm just going to the toilet and then I'm out.
Would you ever, if you were like sufficiently tired and in an awkward social situation, would you ever sacrifice a jacket by leaving it on the back of your chair so people are really not expecting the Harold and leave the jacket there and you're away?
Well, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to source a sacrificial jacket and I'm going to just get a cheap one that I'm happy to lose and... That's a good idea.
Perfect.
I'm going to hit Timu up. A cheap Timu jacket.
It's a stunt jacket. It's just going to hit. Perfect. So, Harry Holt, big part of our popular culture references. So, he was a career politician. I think he went into politics around the age of 27. He was a government minister by the age of 31. And then he became the 17th Prime Minister of Australia, as you mentioned. Now, can we have a little sound effect or a bell or something every time Harold Holt's wife has a dig at him during this episode?
she does have a lot of digs at him.
It's incredible. It's one of those things where it's almost like she loved and hated him in equal measure, is my reading
of
it.
It's almost like he's an endearing scamp.
Yeah.
And he's just up to his old tricks again, old Harry. So basically, Harry... And I didn't know this until I started researching this. All I knew is that he was our Prime Minister that went swimming and went missing. He was also an absolute hound dog for the ladies.
Oh, players got to play when it came to Harold and Holt.
He played. he played many times.
So the first, you might need to get your bell ready. So when Harold Holt came
Let's do a triangle hit. How about that?
Okay.
Like a ding. Yep.
Perfect. Harold Holt
How many do you reckon we're going to get before the end of the episode? I'm going to say 12.
12.
Yep.
So when Harold Holt first came into office, he didn't want any security, which I think a few of his predecessors also said, I don't want security because it distanced me from the public. And then there was a couple of like assassination attempts and some snipers, and he was like...
Well, when Harold Holt was the Prime Minister, the leader of the opposition had an assassination attempt on
Yeah.
Which is, I didn't know about that either.
No, I think Arthur Calwell, someone tried to shoot him through a car window. And so in response to that, Harold Holt went, oh, maybe I should get some security. But then Zara, his wife is called Zara, was quoted as saying he didn't get security because he wanted to be able to hide his extramarital affairs.
Yeah, of which there were many.
Many.
I think she said, and I don't know if she's exaggerating, but she said 12 at one time. 12.
She said he had a lady at every port around the world. Ding, ding, ding. That's the first little dig from Zara.
Yeah.
Just in terms of the other backstory of Harold, but it seems like he was a bit of a weird guy in the sense that he was really into like snorkeling and deep sea swimming,
and spearfishing.
Spearfishing. Like, he would go spearfishing and tuck the fish into his wetsuit and then swim with dead fish in there just bleeding out in him.
Yeah.
That's odd. That's odd.
Is it odd? Or is it? I don't know what.
Do spearfishes do that?
I don't know what they do.
Can you Google where does spearfishes put their fish while they're on the job?
In the 60s or now?
Let's not date it. Let's just say where do they put it.
Doesn't even come up.
Doesn't even come up.
Doesn't even say. I'm pretty sure they have like, well, here's a picture of a guy who has like, it's like a bigger hook with lots of hooks coming off and there's a bunch of fish sort of hanging off that.
I think
that. So he used to put them in. I think that was just the ladyfish that he would do that for. Because ding, ding, ding.
Maybe that was before hooks were invented. He had to put them down his wetsuit. I don't know.
Yeah. And she was also, she was interviewed in the 80s about this. So he died in 67. So this is probably nearly 20 years. And apparently he was like such a ladies' man. He didn't actually have any male friends as well.
Yeah. That was another little dig that she had at him where he was very charming.
Which just makes us feel bad because we don't have lady friends or man friends. It's just, we do the podcast every month. That's about, that's it.
This podcast is my social engagements for the month.
This is it. This is great. I'm about to do the Harry later. I'm just going to disappear from the podcast.
So he also, like, apparently he was described as having incredible powers of endurance underwater, is a direct quote from some of his friends and colleagues, which if you plant that seed and some of the conspiracy theories that are built up around what happened to Harold Holt, because apparently he used to sit in Parliament and see how long he could hold his breath for when he was bored with the discussion. Yes, but apparently he was quite known for going out into deep water and treading water for ages, and to the point that his friends actually said to him, "Yeah, you got to be careful. This is dangerous the way you're, you know, going out there in the water." And then this is a direct quote where Harold Holt said, this is probably a year before he actually disappeared, he said, "What are the odds of a prime minister being drowned?" Which is
pretty
ominous.
There's so many of those kind of things.
Yeah.
Like, so apparently his doctor, before he went swimming, told him, you need to stop swimming.
Yeah.
And then the day of his death, on the Australian newspaper, the front page, doctor tells Holt to stop swimming.
Isn't that amazing?
It's crazy. But like, I'm not a conspiracy theory guy, but if it's like Truman Show-esque, they're trying to like plant this thing that's going to happen. You know, like on the Truman Show?
Yeah.
Like he's trying to buy tickets to a flight and then there's a massive plane crash and to try and dissuade him from doing
totally.
It.
Totally.
Like, planes are the most dangerous form of travel. It just seems really weird.
It is so uncanny, like the likelihood that would be the front page of the paper the day a prime minister disappears. Like it's almost like it's too uncanny to have been, contrived. Like it's just, that's amazing. Like, what are the odds?
It's crazy, yeah. I'm very conscious not to buy into the conspiracy theories because I think it's pretty obvious he just went out there and drowned. But
yeah, but we'll get to them. We'll get to them.
Yeah, we'll get to them. There's quite a lot of conspiracy theories.
Yeah, because I guess against that is the idea that I think on two occasions in the year leading up to his disappearance, he nearly drowned. Like there was two occasions where he became very distressed and ended up being dragged out of the water and was vomiting. It just sounds like he was overconfident in the water and didn't know his own limits.
And I think in that situation, he was like purple. Mm. Ended up coming good. And then he said, that's the closest I've come to drowning, you know?
Yeah.
Which is
I think he would have said
weird once again.
He would have said it like this, though. That's the closest I've ever come to drowning.
Yeah. It's true.
That's how he would have said it. Yeah. And so we have this situation where bit of a different guy who likes pushing his limits in the ocean, nearly drowns twice, likes holding his breath for long periods of time, and then like he moves into this situation where he like a day or two before he actually disappears, he goes on holidays as the Prime Minister. Apparently, as he's leaving to go on this holiday, he has a letter with him from a very senior member of his political party saying, we're very concerned about the performance of the government. Mm. And so there's, again, conspiracy theories around, was this a disappearance or a suicide here? Like, what was the pressure he was under? But then he also, on the way down for his holiday, swung by and picked up his mistress, Mrs. Marjorie Gillespie.
So he's an absolute hound dog. Even with his wife, she was one of his mistresses at one point. She was married and had kids with someone else. Yeah. She got married to someone else. I think they were dating at one point and then they split up. And then she went off and married some other guy, had a couple of kids. Then they started having an affair. She had twins while still married to the other guy, which turned out to be Harold Holt's kids.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, I can't remember if her husband died or if they split up. I think he may have died. And then they got together after that. So she is kind of like, she can't be too surprised because she was doing the dodgy with him as well.
Totally. That's what Dr. Phil used to say. If they do it with you, they'll do it to you.
Yeah.
That's the Dr. Phil quote of the night.
Dr. Phil.
So then he has, on the day of his drowning, we're jumping around a little bit here, but so he's got his mistress's daughter and a friend, and they're spending the weekend together in Portsea, Victoria, which is actually only probably an hour or two from where I live. And they've gone out for the day. And then on the way back, Harold has said, I want to build up a bit of an appetite for lunch. Let's dip into the ocean and have a swim. Mm. And the ocean, very choppy. Very choppy that day.
Heaps of choppy. Yeah.
And so he walks out there and the other people don't go out very far because it's too rough. And then
I think, two people didn't go in at all.
Didn't go in at
all. Too rough.
Yep.
One person went in probably about as far as I do when it's calm and realized that it's too choppy, too much chop, and he goes back out.
That is probably a quick side point. When you go to the ocean, normal ocean, normal waves.
Always touching the ground. Feet are always touching the ground.
I never leave the ground, I'm the same.
Nah. Sometimes I dig my feet into the ground and pretend I'm looking for pippies, but I'm not. I'm just anchoring. No, I don't. No, I'm always, because I'm very aware of my limitations as a swimmer.
Unlike Harold. Overconfident.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yep. That moment where sometimes I go out and I might come up to like, neck height, and then a wave will come in.
I don't go that deep. You go all that to neck height.
Yeah. I'm a terrible swimmer though, so I shouldn't. But then a wave will come in and I'll go up with the wave. And when I come down, the floor's not there anymore because it's pushed me out a little bit.
Yep.
The degree of panic I have in that moment. Not good. Not good. Anyway.
I don't really go much higher than chest height. That's what I'm comfortable with. I go chest height, all good.
Yeah, that's me most of the time. Yep. So Harold's gone out and his wife, Zara, reckons that Harold would have been trying to impress his mistress on the beach.
Yeah.
Ding, ding, ding.
Which is such a primary school thing to do. Again, he's like a 59-year-old prime minister. He's like, check out this, Marjorie. And then he's going,
check out this, Marjorie.
Yeah. It's just ridiculous.
The idea that he's thinking she's not impressed enough that I'm the Prime Minister of the country. She needs to see me going out pretty deep.
Yeah. See this. I'm out past my neck here, Marge.
And so...
But the weird thing is he kind of... What they say, when what they described it from the shore was that there was no waving, there was no panic. He just went out and disappeared.
Yeah. And that's what they say. Bizarre. I don't know how this
like
is.
Like a leaf, I think they said.
Yeah. He just disappeared, like just slipped under.
Yeah.
Because there is, when I take the kids to swimming lessons and stuff, often there are posters about drowning and they always say it's fast, it's silent, it's sudden. And you always think, why wouldn't you kind of like be popping your head back up and yelling? But I'm like, it mustn't be. Like he just disappeared. And so they think there might have been a bit of an undercurrent or a rip he got caught in and he's just been pulled under. And that was the end of Harold. And then
can we get into the conspiracy theories about what people think happened to him?
Hang on, heaps. Before we do that, let's just close the loop and say there was a search party that went on from, I think it was the 17th of December was the day he disappeared. The search party went on officially until like the 7th of January, but his memorial was held 5 days later. So they called it pretty early, like after 5 days.
Yeah,
he's done. That's right.
I think they said it was the biggest search in Australian history. Towards the end, it was just some guy poking his head out of the car just as he drives past. I think it's like nothing there.
Yeah. It's just a guy with a metal detector on the beach.
No, not under the sand.
Yeah. So conspiracy theories. Now, this is where it gets even more interesting.
Yeah, this is your bread and butter right now.
What were your favourites?
So, well, like, let's think about the ones that could be real. So you've got what's within the realms of possibility. Suicide is within the realm. There was some people that came out and said he definitely wouldn't have been suicidal, but that always happens, doesn't it? When people commit suicide, people are often surprised and they go, oh, gee, I just couldn't believe he did it.
Totally. Yeah. Sometimes it's like no one picked it. And
but some people did say he seemed depressed.
Yeah. People said, like, so the argument seemed to be he seemed depressed. He had a lot of pressure on him at work. He had a lot of concerns about his wife finding out about his mistresses. The thing that the police said in their report that was really interesting was that it's very, very rare for someone to suicide in the presence of family and friends.
Mm.
And so that's why they, in their report, said they don't think it was suicide because he had people there with him, which I thought was an interesting point.
I think that's probably true. Do you think? I don't think it was suicide.
No, I don't think it was either.
Yeah. Okay, what else you got? So that was a favorite. The other favorite of mine is that Chinese frogmen picked him up and then there was a waiting submarine there that popped him in and then he defected to China.
That was my favourite too.
Yeah, that's great. I just like Frogman personally.
That they carried him back to the submarine and then he moved on to China and he was living there. And then someone wrote a whole book about this theory and then apparently there was like someone that just said, well, a submarine can't come anywhere near close to the shore because it needs at least like 30 meters clearance before the bottom of the ocean. So, those frogmen would have been dragging him a very long way.
And the best thing was, in the 80s, his wife also disagreed and said, that's not possible because he doesn't even like Chinese food. Was her reasoning.
That's classic Zara. Like, that's
case
great.
Closed. Yeah, so that's done. That's not possible. What else is there? There was eaten by a shark, which I'd say is possible.
You know, my daughter did a little school assignment on Harold Holt disappearing. And as part of that, they were looking at all the different ways he could have died.
Mm.
And a lot of people in her class were like, they're in favor of the eaten by a shark theory because he was dressed in a black wetsuit. They thought he could look like a seal. Kind of explains that he was a pretty good swimmer, but he kind of disappeared really suddenly. Shark theory has some legs, but I don't think it's most likely.
It's possible. I'd say it's possible. Possible. But like, it does happen.
Yeah. There was a lot of theories about he was on certain medication at the time because he had a shoulder injury. They thought he was on morphine that could have impaired his decision making. I guess that's kind of a sub theory of the drowning theory. Heart attack was another one that people thought.
Yeah, that's possible. I think he was a bit of a ladies' man and he may have hooked up with a mermaid out there. That's my only I'm just questioning it. That's all. Just questioning it.
Very likely.
Ding, ding. Yeah.
Oh, I missed one ding, ding for Zara, the wife, as well.
Oh, there was also, sorry, I'll say again.
The one ding I missed for Zara earlier was with the suicide theory. Zara said that Harold was too selfish to suicide.
Like, she did not like him very much at all. other people thought the CIA may have assassinated him.
Yes, well. I read that as well. That was because he intended to pull the Australian troops out of Vietnam. And so they were obviously, you know, that theory says they were trying to stop that action, that decision.
But I find that hard to believe because he was actually very good friends with LBJ. They met before either of them were even in politics, I think. So they had this long relationship. He used to go, I read one article where it said Harold Holt used to go stay at Camp David, and he and Johnson reportedly played tennis, lounged by the pool, and watched movies together. If they added the game of Twister, that's a date. I'm telling you.
He's a player.
That's a better date than I've ever been on. He's a player. I'd go all the way with LBJ. Yeah.
What movie should we watch tonight, LBJ? That was the... Yeah. And there was the very obvious theory that he kind of faked his own death so he could go and live with a lover somewhere else. But I think from what we know of Harold is he was doing that without having to fake his own death.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. There's not much to gain there.
Yeah. All in all, though, Frogman Chinese submarine theory is the best theory.
Yeah. But, yeah. So, look, I think it's almost certain he just drowned.
Yeah, which makes it all the more hilarious and ridiculous that there's a classic thing in Australia. Anyone that's come here is probably aware of it, particularly travelling comedians love mentioning the fact that there's a swimming centre named after Harold Holt.
Yeah, there's one in Melbourne, the Harold Holt Swimming Centre, which it is it's a strange strange decision, yeah. Whoever did that.
Because I always had presumed that swimming centre was named after Harold Holt when he became Prime Minister.
Yeah, when he was alive.
And then he drowned and they just didn't change the name. But they actually named it after him in the year after he died, which is so
right, so soon as well.
It was literally in the wake of his disappearance from drowning, they named a swimming centre after him.
Yeah.
That's so insensitive.
Very weird decision. I don't know if that made more sense back in the 60s. Maybe it seemed like less inappropriate. I don't know.
Oh, bizarre. Bizarre.
It's interesting that the way he died was drowning in the ocean. But even when he was on land, he was also drowning in... So... I can't say that.
That is great.
I can't say it.
That has got to stay in. That is very good. That is great. Alrighty, well, I think that's all I've got on Harold Holt's disappearance. Do you have anything else?
No, not really. It's just really it's conspiracy theories, and he just happened to drown. That's it. But it was back in the day when he had, well, by choice, no guards. It would never happen now. Is why it kind of when you think about it, just seems crazy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
very good, Harold Holt. What a topic. Great work. Great work. We have time for a very quick social etiquette. I know that's probably, we've probably gone a little bit longer than we thought we were going to, but let's do a quick social etiquette and then wrap it up.
If you've got a social problem that makes you want to run and hide, then we recommend you listen to Luke and Dawn's Etiquette Guide. Luke and Dawn's Etiquette Guide, if you want.
All right, Dawn. So, witnessed something quite hilarious the other day where I was standing around with some other parents from the school, and one of their kids was eating a sausage roll out of a brown paper bag. The wind caught the bag and the bag started blowing down the footpath. And the mum that I was standing next to started chasing after the brown paper bag. And she got about 15 or 20 meters down the footpath. But this bag was really moving.
Yeah.
And she's chasing it and chasing it and chasing it, but she wasn't catching the bag. And then she stopped and turned around and said, "Do you reckon I've chased it far enough?"
Yeah. Was it actually 20 meters? That's a long, a 20 that's a decent meter chase.
Run. It was a good run.
Yeah, that's a chase.
And so the social etiquette for tonight how many meters do you need to chase a bit of rubbish that's been caught in the wind before you're allowed to stop chasing?
What do you think? I reckon no more than 10. I reckon once you've done 10, I can, look, it's gone. It's gone to a better life now.
When you think of 10 meters in your head, how are you gauging how long 10 meters is? Just as a quick side question. What's your frame of reference for 10 meters?
I'm notoriously bad. I just think of a football field.
Yes, same here.
Yeah.
The 10 meter line from the try line. Would I chase it that far?
But I do that for all measurements. If I'm measuring 2 centimeters, I'm like, it's a football field. I need to think of it. It doesn't make sense. It's not helpful.
I used to do the 10 meter diving tower at the city pool. But now I move to the football field, 10 meter increments.
Yeah, absolutely.
I reckon you've got to chase more than 10 meters. I reckon 20 meters.
I think it depends on the rubbish as well. If it's like a paper bag, that's quite organic. Like, it's almost like it's going back home. If it's like plastic, I'll go longer.
Yeah, that's going to be around for centuries. Yeah, that's true.
I always have a bit of a concern is that at some point, if you're going for too long, it starts looking like a silent movie. And it's like a comedy from the olden days. And I start getting uncomfortable. It's like, because people will be watching and I'm just chasing this thing around like Charlie Chaplin.
So true. Okay, the absolute worst moment, though, when you're chasing a bit of rubbish is the moment where you think you've got it and you bend down. But in bending down, you stop your momentum forward. And then it skips away again. That moment is the worst moment.
Yeah. And it happens, and that's why you just got to give up at some point. You got to cut your losses. It's like when you back in the olden days, they would bend down to pick up their hat and then they'd kick it with their foot as they bend down. Yeah. That's classic Chaplin.
A little trick for young players. If you're chasing a bit of rubbish in a high wind scenario, now just stomp on it to stop the momentum before I commit to the bend. Once you commit to the bend, that bag could go anywhere. So you just stomp on it.
Because when you get
first.
To our age, the bend, it's a process. Oh. It takes a bit of time. Yeah. It's not like you're a nimble 10-year-old. It takes a while and there's plenty of time for it to blow away.
I thought the way that this parent turned around and asked the crowd, are we considering this far enough? I thought it was a great strategy. Getting that social validation that you can give up the chase.
Did people say, oh yeah, that's enough?
Well, I think the husband said, no, keep going.
He's in trouble. He is in trouble.
All in all, I think she handled that to perfection. That was great.
I like that. The open question. Not bad.
Alrighty, well, I can tell you're getting tired. Your yawn per minute ratio is through the roof at the moment. Alrighty, well, I think that is more than enough from us. Harold Holt, absolute player. He's the
big
original.
Time. Big time.
The original Leisure Suit Larry, I would say.
Ah, Leisure Suit Larry. Did you ever play that as a kid?
Yeah. I think I played it once. Yeah.
Did you? Yeah.
That's Harold Holt.
I went to a friend's place once and there's always terrible graphics. I can't remember who it was, but he had strip poker computer game.
Yes.
And so I was like, right, let's give this a go. Anyway, it turns out I'm really bad at poker. She was putting clothes on. She had like 6 coats on by the end.
What a sad state of affairs on a very simple computer.
I was like, I've hit the big time, like 13-year-old Don. But nah, not even close.
And if you're chasing a bag, I think we agreed somewhere between 10 and 20 meters. Feel free to stop the chase and get on with your day.
You can disengage. Yep. Yeah.
Other than that, we will see you next month.
Yeah. Hit us up. Now, we are out of reviews officially now. It's all over. The dream is over. Please send us a review. iTunes, Spotify. I don't know if that does reviews. Podchaser. What's that about? At outlook.com. Drop us a line. Say good day.
Alrighty. Have a good one. Catch you next time.
See you guys. Love you. Bye.